Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 115. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in once again for David Todd, who's busy wrapping up the Penguins season, which we hope is going to end up in them hoisting the Stanley Cup, is Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday, Dave. And yeah, hopefully David Todd gets things wrapped up sooner than later. It's looking that way, man. And the Penguins, they really dominated this series so far.
Well, you want to talk about two good games back-to-back.
Yeah.
You know, the Penguins there up 2-0 going to San Jose. And boy, they could steal this third one. Mm-hmm. The city of Pittsburgh really should start getting excited. I have a feeling there. Kind of a dead day, I think, sports-wise, unless you're a huge baseball fan talking about this, you know, today being Friday, because no Stanley Cup game tonight. The NBA Finals, of course, got underway Thursday night, and I believe they're going to be off until like Sunday as well, too. So, and the Steelers have now wrapped up their second week of OTA practices, so probably not expecting much on the news wire, you know, as far as they go. So, let's kind of open things up today, Alex, with talking about really a Jacksonville Jaguar player, and talking about, of course, Allen Hurns, who signed a new extension with the Jaguars. I haven't seen the full breakdown of the contract outside of maybe just some generic kind of stuff. My understanding, $40 million in new money. It's basically a four-year extension on top of his year this year. And $20 million guaranteed, which I'm sure that's not going to be a full $20 million guaranteed, probably going to be $10 to $11 million of that tied to injury guarantees. Haven't seen the signing bonus yet, but if I were to guess, it's going to probably be around between $8 and $10 million. This is a guy, I think, that has caught 115 total passes in his first two seasons with the Jaguars, first two seasons in a year, former undrafted free agent, averaging $10 million, if that's the way the new money indeed works out, would put him ahead of one Antonio Brown, which, you know, we talked quite a bit about his contract so far this offseason. What are you thinking if you're Antonio Brown and you see a guy like Allen Hurns who, you know, 115, Antonio is easily dwarfed him in one season full of catches. You know, what's going through a guy like Antonio Brown's head right now?
He's probably saying, shoot, I shouldn't have told ESPN that I wasn't worried about the money 2 days ago, you know? Maybe some bad timing there. But, I mean, you know, it really doesn't even affect Brown, because obviously his payday is going to be so much greater and so far out of the realm of what Hurns is getting, that it's not going to obviously really have any effect. But yeah, he's probably wishing he could sign a new contract himself right now.
Yeah, and, you know, there's been no word on that. Antonio, during that interview on ESPN earlier this week, look, all you can say about Antonio Brown is he's handling this the right way. Mm-hmm. You know, he keeps talking about, I'm just, you know, focused on playing football and being around my teammates and all that stuff. And he did go on to say, what was the quote specifically here that about the money? I can't remember exactly what he said, but something to the effect of, here it is. I think money's not a need for me right now, and I think things will work out as the time continues to unfold. with that said, you know, Drew Rosenhaus, and Rosenhaus represented Hurns as well too, right?
I'm not sure, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I'm pretty sure he did, but you know, Kevin Colbert has said, you know, a few times since, I think dating back to last offseason, that that, you know, they expect Antonio to play out his contract, and you know, we'll see if they do anything as far as paying him forward any money from 2017 the way they did last year. Mm-hmm. He, of course, Antonio got a, you know, really $2 million of his 2016 money during last offseason. With that said, you know, come time to pay the piper, and assuming Antonio Brown has another great 2016 season, is there any concern to you whatsoever that a new deal will never get done with Antonio?
No, honestly, none whatsoever. And really, Dave, I thought this interview with ESPN was really important and really telling, because Brown basically voluntarily just gave up all the leverage he might have if he ever wanted to consider to hold out, you know, this year at some point. I mean, he says, the game's been great to me, the Steelers have been great to me, and I think things will work out. You mentioned the quote about the money, it's not a need for me. He again says things will work out. You can't say that and then, you know, hold out in training camp or hold out at some point or complain about your contract. So, you know, when you say those things, you basically admit that I'm not going to talk about this at all. I'm not going to make this an issue. I'm conceding all the leverage I might have, and I'm just confident things are going to get done. So really, Dave, I know it's the off season and news is kind of slow right now. We might kind of overanalyze some things, but I thought those statements that he made and the conviction he had with it was wildly important, and it honestly made me feel a whole lot better.
And a quick search here. Drew Rosenhaus is indeed the agent for Allen Hurns. I thought I'd saw it somewhere on Twitter there. Let's say Antonio only catches 100 footballs, you know, this upcoming season for whatever reason. I mean, still are, you know, arguably the best receiver in the league, and come time to get a new contract done with him next year. You know, someone asked me this on Twitter, you know, what am I thinking new money wise, and suggested, and I think I wrote this a week or two ago as well, you know, 4 years extension, $64 million, which would of course average out to $16 million a year in new money. I think that's just a starting point, because mm-hmm. God knows who else is going to sign a contract, between now and then.
Right.
And isn't the Chicago Bears help me out
Alshon
here with
Jeffrey?
Right, isn't he still trying to work on a new deal as well too?
He's under the tag, and I think he's actually missing OTAs right now, trying to look for that new deal.
Right. Now, I wouldn't expect his number to be, you know, 14, 15 million. There is a possibility of that. But one would think that the starting price with Antonio would be at the minimum of 16 million. And, you know, we'll see. I'm not worried about it either. You know, part of me was concerned, you know, maybe several months ago mm-hmm. that Antonio might, you know, have some sort of a training camp holdout or something like that. But yeah, his comments, you know, this past week on ESPN during that interview, you know, he's all I can say about him is he's handling this thing right.
Yeah, and we've seen many receivers just, you know, in the NFL pass, you know, Terrell Owens, or, you know, you can throw out so many different names, you know, create an issue about it. So, you know, I think AB does have a little bit of diva in him, but it's not in this regard, and we're thankful for that.
Well, and what receiver is it? You know,
right.
He doesn't get that kind of, you know, I want the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think they even said, you know, his first day during when he showed up for OTAs there after Dancing with the Stars was over, the first pass, I think, went to him in the seven shots, and as soon as the second pass didn't go to him, he was already hollering to throw me the football.
Yeah.
But I mean, you want your star players to want the football, and yeah, I don't anticipate him being a problem the rest of this offseason. It will be interesting though to see if the Steelers do indeed try to pay him forward, you know, in any of his 2017 money, knowing that in, you know, ultimately they're going to get a long-term extension worked out.
Would that probably be the last move that they make? It would probably be dependent on getting, you know, the cash deal done and all that to lower the cap number so you can throw that money into this year with that. Does that make sense that would be like the last move that they make?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't maybe say last, but I would say one of the several that could potentially happen once the team, you know, reports to Latrobe. And in fact, I would expect it later on. I mean, heck, you just for security's sake, you want to make sure you guys make it through the through the at least the third game of the preseason. Sometime after that, you know, you have plenty of time, and then of course you want to provide yourself with that, you know, $3 million salary cap cushion heading into the season for injury concerns and all like that. So I'm not going to rule it out completely, you know, of them paying him forward in any money. But at the same time, I think with the comments that Colbert's made and you know, not expecting an extension for Antonio Brown at any point during this offseason, that it wouldn't surprise me if it went, you know, either way and he didn't get paid forward some of that money as well.
Let me ask you, now that we've talked about Antonio Brown and how it relates to Allen Hurns, I think it relates honestly more, this Hurns deal, to Marcus Wheaton. What's your take? Does this have an effect on Wheaton's market value going forward, knowing he's going to be a free agent after this season?
Well, I'm already expecting, and you are probably as well, of Wheaton leaving via free agency after this season's over. Now, as far as what his market value is, you know, I haven't looked at the full list of wide receivers who will be, you know, who are expected to hit the unrestricted free agent market next offseason.
Right,
but you would think that Wheaton would be one of the more attractive ones. I mean, look at what we saw, you know, this every year, you know, when you look at the top of those wide receiver free agents, it's not overly sexy, you know.
Right.
I mean, you do have the Emmanuel Sanders and all like that, and I kind of classify Wheaton as maybe being sort of in that category there. So I think regardless, Wheaton can probably expect his market value to start. Yeah, this is assuming he catches, let's say, 50, 60 balls, and stays healthy during the 2016 season. I think his market value automatically starts at around $10 million.
You think it's that high?
Yeah, I mean, because look at what these guys got paid this year.
Yeah.
You know, $8, $9 million. And you know, assuming, like I said, assuming Marcus Wheaton, you know, catches 50 to 60 balls, which I think there's a good chance of that happening. You know, I think $10 million is probably the starting point, because remember, this is a supply and demand type situation when you're talking about free agency. So while his realistic market value might only be $8 or $9 million, you know, it's a supply and demand and only takes one team type, you know, situation. So I would think it starts somewhere around $10 million.
Yeah, I mean, I know you know this stuff a whole lot better than me, but I honestly think that you could still possibly, you know, get Wheaton for around the Mohamed Sanu money, which was 5 years, $32.5 million. And I'd be willing to do that, I think. I mean, it obviously depends a lot on how the season goes. I expect Wheaton to have a really solid season. But you freed up a lot of money with Martavis Bryant's future now in doubt. So why not apply that money that you would have spent on him on Wheaton?
I would be shocked. I mean, nothing's, as I'd like to say, impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be shocked. I think Marcus Wheaton would be doing himself a disservice to not try to get to free agency. I mean, obviously. Well, what's the average that you're talking about?
Sanu's average is 6.5 a year. So it might be, I'd call it 7 a year for Wheaton.
I think he would be shooting himself. I think he'd be doing himself a big disservice, because the guaranteed money that would come along with a deal like that, you know, especially knowing how the Steelers likes to structure them, wouldn't be all that great either. And you have to think ahead to, you know, other players that you have coming up as well too. I just would be shocked.
But if
I mean,
Pittsburgh signs him, you know, they always sign cheap. Gay Foster got a lot less than what we thought.
But I think a guy like Wheaton knows what's out there for him.
Well, Foster knew too. Foster turned down money. I bet Gay had more money he could have chased out there.
But that wasn't Foster's or Gay's first contract either.
No. But I mean,
and this is Wheaton's first, and
right,
possibly, you know, quite possibly his only payday.
It's not like Foster and Gay ever cashed in. Gay's made nothing in his career, you know. They
but they But they have made something, though. You know, they had the security, and they've had the slap in the face in the past as far as free agency has gone, too.
Well, Gay has, yeah. Foster never really.
Well, Foster has been a free agent before.
Yeah, but you know, he never went. You know, and
he never went, but he wasn't as premier either.
Right. No, I'm just saying is that the Steelers, whenever they lock up their guys, they do a great job of selling the organization, and guys want to come back. People know what it's like when you leave the organization, what happens oftentimes. There's some, you know, incentivism for that to come back and return. And honestly, I mean, again, I don't know who's all a free agent, but Larry Fitzgerald's in the last year of his deal. Alshon Jeffrey's playing on the tag right now. No idea if he's going to get a long-term deal. So if those guys come out, they're going to be the top guys, unlike last year when it was Jones and Sanu, and they got inflated because the market was a lot weaker. So I think if you get some of those names out there, it's going to push Wheaton's value down a little bit.
I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. I even though I don't view Marcus Wheaton as a premier wide receiver in this league, I still think his market value, you know, $9-10 million right now, at least. If he takes anything less than that, I think, and look at it this way too. I think if he re-signs, he's always going to be in the shadow of Antonio Brown, and he's never going to be a guy that's going to catch, you know, especially in Pittsburgh, more than 60 balls in a season, if you ask me. So, you know, I just think he would be doing himself a huge disservice by not, you know, allowing himself to accepting less than or accepting something similar to what you're throwing out. I just don't see it. Now, would I be upset if the Steelers locked him up for you know, $7 million a season? Absolutely not. You know, but I just don't see that happening. Yeah. I would be shocked.
Okay. Now, I hope he does himself a disservice because I want him to come back to Pittsburgh, and I know most people are kind of like mild on it if Wheaton goes. Okay, Wheaton goes, but I bet you after the season, most fans will sing a different tune and really hope that Wheaton comes back. I think he's going to have a really solid season.
As far as he goes, he's saying all the right things, too, and he talked on Sirius on Thursday, talking about moving more into the slot last year and the things that went along with that and how he really liked it and talking about the loss of Heath Miller and how that'll be different for him this year because he still kind of relied on Heath Miller for a lot of the hot reads and stuff like that. And he admitted that probably needs to take more of a leadership role this year and have an even bigger or larger understanding of the offense this year. Especially being as how a guy like Ladarius Green will be new to the offense and you know, being alongside him in this offense as well, too. You know, he was kind of pushed earlier this week to talk about, you know, where he sees himself playing more inside, outside, and he says, you know, it's really up to Todd Haley. He really didn't give an indication as to where he might be playing more, but I think the more you go back and you look at his overall body of work and you kind of read in between the lines of what has been said so far this offseason, he's going to be more of a slot guy than anything else.
Yeah, and I think that's where he's going to work best. I think there's a lot of trust and reliability, you know, at him as opposed to Sammy Coates. And I think, you know, you're going to need that, especially without Heath Miller now. So I think while Wheaton's going to get some more time on the outside, and as I said on Monday's podcast, Dave, that I'm excited for that. I think it's going to help him be a more vertical threat because he is a guy that can take the top off of defense, and people don't think really understand that and realize just how much he is that. 17 yards per catch last year, ninth in the league, led the Steelers. But he's probably going to still have to spend a lot of his time in the slot, yeah.
And you know we expect a lot of 11 personnel again this year. So you know one would think that would dictate him seeing a lot of time in the slot to go along with that. Even though you know Sammy Coates could probably get some time in there as well. And then you know we'll see Coates and DHB probably, you know, split some time on the outside, you know, filling in that role that Martavis Bryant has played the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, but Haley will move guys around so they'll all get their exposure in different spots. So, you know, but I like Coates on the outside because of that speed. I think he's a better blocker. I think it helps a little bit to have him on the outside as opposed to the slot. Again, the trust that you have, being able to read coverages, run some of those option routes. Obviously, you'd much rather give that to Marcus Wheaton than Sammy Coates. Coates makes a couple mistakes. It's going to make the team hesitant to put him back in there. So I think maybe, you know, the team might try it out. It probably might not work as well as they hope, and then Wheaton might have to play the slot a little bit more out of necessity. But for the snaps he does get outside, I am excited because, like I said, I think he can make some big plays there.
A couple other guys. The buzz is continuing to be strong surrounding two former undrafted free agents that I know you'll definitely be excited to report on during training camp this year. I'm talking about Eli Rogers and Xavier Grimble, the tight end, former tight end out of USC. Is this buzz? How manufactured do you think all this is?
Pretty manufactured. This goes on in 31 other cities right now, so you can't get too, you know, crazy about it. But you know, you do want to look at these things and you know, keep them in mind as we go for training camp. And Rogers is a guy who had buzz last year, who I saw. You know, a lot of people talk about what Rogers did, but most people did not see Eli Rogers last year because he didn't make it to a game. So I saw him in all the practices he was in. And you can see some of those traits, that quickness. He's got the return value. He's a quick to the tuck kind of guy. He gets the ball and gets upfield, both as a returner and a receiver. So I'm excited for him. Grimble's a guy that just, I mean, he's all muscle. You see some of those pictures on Steelers.com, some of the videos they do. He's an athletic guy. He's made some tough catches. You kind of get some of those highlights on Steelers.com. You see that. So there's reason for excitement. Why not? You know, hope springs eternal this time, but, you know, it's going on everywhere.
With Eli Rogers, I think the biggest thing that kind of stuck out to me in a few of the reports, kind of the interviews that he has given over the course or since OTAs have started, was the fact that foot problem that he had, if I read it right, has bothered him for some time now. So
we wrote that back in October. I know people are reporting about that now. We were on that a long time ago. Yeah, he injured that in high school, and he never got it fixed. And so he had tweeted out or put on Instagram back in October, I think it was, that he had felt as good as he had basically since high school. So, yeah, he's going to be really 100% now, and that's exciting.
And this is a guy that caught between 40 and 50 balls, if my memory serves me, all 4 years while at Louisville. You know, he's one of those guys that obviously going to be competing against a guy like DeMarcus Ayers, you know, for the fifth wide receiver slash maybe punt return role this year. Yeah. Rodgers having a year in that building, and he even, you know, said as much during the interviews this past couple weeks, sounds like he's, you know, feels like he has a leg up in this competition, as he should. Mm-hmm. And boy, as long as he stays healthy, he's one of the guys offensively that I'm really looking forward to see. And when it comes to Xavier Grimble, I mean, quite honestly, you know, all we really have to go on with this guy is his USC tape, and that's been several years removed from that now. But you know, he is a guy that's had a lot of buzz throughout this off season, or really dating back to I think late last season. And I think even Jacob Klinger from Penn Live said this past week that a lot of players have been talking him up during practice as well too. The biggest thing with a guy like him is, A, he has to be able to block, and I think he understands that, and B, you know, has to give you something. He's probably not going to be a core special teams guy, talking about playing, you know, all four core units, but if he can give you help in two of those and be dependable and fill lanes and everything like that, it really makes him, his ability or his potential to really knock on the doors of 50 as far as a 53-man roster goes, and that kind of ties into what I've kind of said all offseason. I'm a huge Matt Spaeth fan over the years. I really thought Matt Spaeth was a guy that was underrated, especially during his first stint in Pittsburgh. But you know, to me, Matt Spaeth is you know, he's susceptible to being a veteran cut this year, and I think Jeremy Fowler of ESPN even wrote as much in a piece for ESPN this year. And Xavier Grimble, to me, is a guy who could potentially steal that number three tight end spot this year.
Yeah, I think it's up for grabs at the least. I don't know who it's going to go to. Grimble, Space, David Johnson. I think Spaythe will enter as the quote-unquote favorite, but I think that job is very much up in the air. And, you know, Spaythe's probably going to be limited. I mean, he was an every-other-day kind of guy last year, switching off with Heath Miller just because he's older. He's dealing with his own problems. You know, he's had a knee problem. He had an elbow problem 2 years ago. You know, his body's starting to break down. His special teams value is basically none. So now he's going to go against, you know, Grimble, who's a completely different body type, who's fresh legs, extremely athletic, great body type. So, you know, that'll be interesting. Now, I don't know what kind of special teams value, you know, the third tight end is going to really be able to bring a little bit on the kick return unit, you know, as part of that, I guess, wedge, kind of that back four, I guess you can call it. But they're probably not going to be running down punts, because even though Spaythe kind of did it last year, with the way the roster looks right now, I wouldn't expect him to do it this year, because you're, you know, on the punt team as kind of those end guys, the wings, you're going to have Roosevelt Nix and probably a safety. It was Will Allen last year, but my guess is that you're going to have Sean Davis do it this year. So I think you're really only going to be a one, maybe two-phase guy. I mean, a field goal unit, so two-phase guy on special teams. So I don't think that value really does a whole lot. But if you can show something on offense and be a competent blocker, you're going to stand out.
Grimble is more Ladarius Green than he is Matt Spaythe.
Yeah, definitely a guy who profiles as an athlete. So I don't know. I don't really know anything about his blocking. And, of course, that is still so paramount in Pittsburgh, where you have to be able to you know, base block the end in the run game, you know, solo block the end in pass protection. It doesn't matter if you're a veteran or a rookie, how many snaps, your experience, your background, if you're doing it. And if you can't, then you can't play in Pittsburgh.
I know it's early, way early, but I could potentially see, and I know we've kind of hit on this in the past, I could potentially see three tight ends being kept in of course, Green, Jesse James, Xavier Grimble, and then a true fullback, of course, in Roosevelt Nix. I mean, that's as close of a lock as you can get with Nix. And then, you know, keeping a guy like David Johnson really makes a lot of sense, because, you know, depending on how your inactive list goes from week to week, you know, a guy like David Johnson could be inactive 1 week, depending on the health of the roster, or be up the next week serving as a, you know, fullback, H-back, slash tight end as well, too. And especially if a guy like Matt Spaythe doesn't make the roster, I think that increases the chances of not only Grimble, but I think it increases the chances of David Johnson making it.
I don't know, Dave, because if you're going to do that, if they're all up, I mean, what's their game day role? They're not going to give you enough on special teams. I mean, again, the reason why Will Johnson and Nix were kept last year and you had that situation was because of the, you know, immense special teams value those guys had. I mean, Johnson, Nix, four-phase, you know, core special teamers. You're not going to have that. So I don't think I agree with that, because you're not going to get that same special teams value.
Well, I think that, you know, you're obviously, if you have all five of those that I just named on your 53, all five, in my opinion, aren't likely to dress every week.
Yeah. Well, then what's the point of keeping them in the first place?
Well, I mean, A, you don't have a backup fullback on this roster. Not
yeah, but you don't need one.
You don't use one, but I mean, we saw this team kind of struggle a little bit once Nix went down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when they did decide, I mean, make no mistake about it, Roosevelt Nix was a difference maker when he was on the field last year offensively, and none of us saw that coming.
Right, no, not I did not see that at all.
Okay, and on the flip side, I don't think Will, you know, you hated to see a guy like Will Johnson leave, but he was more tight end than he was fullback. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, I think David Johnson is, you know, more fullback than Will Johnson was. While that's not saying much, but he could also probably a better end of the line blocker than Will Johnson was as well.
Yeah, probably a little bit.
So what I'm getting at is, I think it gives you roster game day flexibility by having a guy like Grimble. And look, you need seven inactive players every week anyway.
Right.
So, you know, my view is, and especially if a guy like Spaythe, you know, doesn't make the roster, it really gives you some flexibility. If I were to draw it out right now, that's the way I would draw it out as far as those five making the roster.
Man, I don't know. I mean, again, it gives you offensive flexibility, but it hinders you on special teams flexibility because those guys aren't going to give you much. And
well, I think Grimble could give you something on two units.
Well, yeah, but I mean, every tight end is going to do that. I mean, Matt Spaeth is going to do. If he makes a team, he's going to be on two units this year. So, I mean, that's not anything different than the norm.
And I mean, you're obviously. I think Ladarius Green obviously isn't going to play special teams for
right.
you. You know, how big of an asset is Jesse James?
In terms of what?
Special teams.
I mean, he could do it. Green will not run down punts, but Green ran down punts last year. I don't know if people realize that. He was on the punt coverage unit. But no tight end's going to run down anything this year because there's not going to be a need for that unless injuries happen. But you cross that bridge when you come to it. So,
you're more leaning to keeping three true tight ends and one.
Yeah.
Fullback.
Here's what I would do right now, and this could change. Camp's going to tell us a lot. I would keep. Obviously, you're going to have Green, James. I would have David Johnson be the third tight end who's going to be active every week because he can play fullback tight end. He's a versatile chess piece. So if something happens to Rosie Nix in game, you always have David Johnson active because if in your scenario, if David Johnson's down that week and Nix gets hurt, you're still screwed for that particular week. So you have Johnson that can kind of do either or. You keep Rosie Nix. You have Grimble on the practice squad, and Matt Spaeth is no more.
I think
that marries it. I have my offensive flexibility that you have, but I also free up a roster spot for somebody else.
Yeah, that could potentially work. And look, I mean, even though we're going to be probably talking up Xavier Grimble for the remainder of the offseason, you know, he's not one of those guys that you're going to be concerned about exposing to waivers.
Yeah, probably not.
Barring him just really, or an injury or something
biggest,
like that.
Biggest
you
thing
know,
with him, and I think he would noted it, that somebody else, and like, forgive me, I can't remember the reporter that would call it out, but the biggest thing for Grimble is the conditioning. He's got to work on that, and that's true of any young guy. It's not pointing him out specifically, but, you know, conditioning is number one for the Steelers, for any team, really, but Pittsburgh, Tomlin, Haley always hammer that point home. You have to show up in the best shape of your life, better than what you think is the best shape in your life. If you don't do that, you're not going to be able to make it 15 practices.
So you still think, regardless of what happens with Matt Spaeth, that Xavier Grimble is really going to have a tough time making this roster? Barring injury.
Well, his path, I guess if you asked me to map out a way, it would be that he beats out basically Spaeth and David Johnson. He becomes a third tight end, and you don't keep another fullback or anything like that. He's just true third tight end. Maybe he could. I mean, it's really hard to say. Maybe he's going to be a versatile guy. Maybe he gets work in the backfield. I mean, maybe not. I have no idea. But I think that's as bad as just being the third true tight end. You wipe your hands clean of Matt Spaeth, David Johnson. And let's be honest, David Johnson, Matt Spaeth, they're going to be in free agency all year long. No one's picking those guys up. So if you need to go back to those guys with an injury or something doesn't work out, they're probably going to be there.
Well, Matt Spaeth could be a guy that latches on with a team after week one.
Yeah, maybe. But
because salary not being guaranteed and everything that goes along with that. But put a percent chance on Spaeth not making the 53 as we sit here today. Maybe that's a better way to attack this whole thing.
I mean, I know I've called them, you know, as if you, probably the favorite going into camp. So I'm going to sound a little hypocritical here because my gut says that he's not going to make it, and I want to listen to my gut here for once, and I'm going to say there's a 60% chance Matt Spaeth does not make the roster.
I'm going to say there's a 75% chance Matt Spaeth, and I'm not a Matt Spaeth hater.
Who is? There's no one that hates Matt Spaeth.
Yeah, there are. Boy,
he's there.
He has been a large section of the fan base has not liked Matt Spaeth since he was
he's
drafted.
Like bread. He's just there. How do you hate bread?
And I think that the year, I think some came back around to him the year that he spent away because of the work that he put on tape with the Chicago Bears. Now the Bears, I don't think used him as much as an in the line as they probably should. They try to use him probably more, as a pass catcher or line him up a little bit more as a pass catcher than they probably should. Albeit that wasn't much, but. I mean, look, Spaeth is here. Here's the thing that stood out to me last year with Matt Spaeth. I thought it was obvious that his blocking has diminished as an end of the line guy. I mean, obviously couldn't get out to the edge like he used to be able to do, on, you know, especially on some of those screens and those type of things. Just, you know, end of the line blocking just wasn't what it was, what it used to be, or what I've come to expect with Matt Spaeth. Not surprising based on his age. And look, he did miss what, 3 games with hand, knee, type injuries, and you always kind of worry about that thing. An older a guy gets, and I think he did have a little bit of off season work done on him as well too. So, you know, if he's not going to be a special teams demon for you, which he really never has been his entire career, I really think you've got to look at alternatives there.
And the other factor is with the Steelers doing more of some of that 6 offensive lineman, Chris Hubbard kind of stuff. I mean, you know, Spaeth basically functions as that role. So if you can just use a lineman instead in that role, you basically get the same thing. And so there's, you know, an incentive to cut Spaeth for that because it could potentially, you know, you have somebody already to do that spot.
I guess my counter argument to that would, or an attempt at one would be, man, I just hate, you know, offensive linemen just don't present any threat as going out, you know, and being a pass catcher. Not that.
Yeah,
Matt,
I was
going to
say my counter is neither does Matt Spaeth.
Right. That's why I say my attempt at it would be that. It would be great if we were able to see a guy like Grimble or you know, and here's the thing. When you have guys, I guess here's my biggest thing. I worry about Ladarius Green taking a step forward as a more complete blocker this year, especially, man, missing OTAs. I know it might not seem like much, but in my opinion, it is. You want them working on that kind of stuff as much as possible. Jesse James, he's still more Matt Spaeth than he is Ladarius Green or Heath Miller. You know, I think he can get down the field obviously better than Heath Miller could. Like to see him become more of a complete tight end. But I think if you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is, when I go two tight ends, I want them to both be guys that can at least give you the threat of being a pass catcher.
And actually, I do harbor a good bit of concern over Darius Green. The injury factor is kind of worrisome because, like you say, he's already missing, you know, valuable chunk of time to learn. You know, an OTA is going to come in camp a little bit behind and have to play catch up. And then there's the concussion factor. You know, he had several concussions last year. You never know. It's always, you know, a what if. But if something else happens, he can miss a lot of time. A guy that has a real long history of some pretty nasty concussions. So that does worry me some.
I'm more worried about just the missed time, just overall from every aspect.
Right, but specifically concussions, obviously, is really nothing to play around with.
Right, right. And you know, some people I've seen some people projecting 50, 60 catches for him this season. I'm not seeing it.
For Green?
I mean Green. For Green.
I think Green will do it.
You think
Heath had, 53 last year? Green is the pass catcher. Heath Miller was not necessarily that. Heath had 60 last year. He had 66 the year before, 58 in 2013. Green will catch at least 55. There's no way Green catches less than last year Heath Miller.
I'll take the under.
Yeah, you're going to lose that money. You're going to lose that money. That Vegas is getting to you.
I think he hits the 40 mark. I think he hits. This of course assumes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm under the assumption that he plays 16 games. If he doesn't, obviously different story.
Boy, I would do backflips if he catches 55, 60
balls. Why don't you think he'll catch as many as Heath did last year?
I just don't think they're going to put him out there as much as maybe people think that they're going to put him out there.
What do you
as
mean,
much.
Put him, but line him up in slot?
Yeah,
he gets
right.
Catch
right.
Him in line. I mean, Heath caught 60. Basically, is the inline guy last year.
I just don't see him taking to that role.
You don't think he's going to be the inline guy?
No, I think he's going to be the inline guy. I just don't think he's going to be I don't think he's going to be the focal point that Heath Miller was at times. I don't think the trust factor is going to be there with Roethlisberger, and I do worry about this missed time during the offseason. Mm. So just deep down inside, I fear he's not going to catch 50 balls
right,
this year.
Sure.
I don't think he's going to be the focal point people think he's going to be.
Maybe that's true to an extent, but I still think he'll catch at least 55. I mean, what is that? How many is that per game? What's the – let's do the – doing math.
Well, 60 would be 60 would be five
a game. 55 is – no, 60 is not five a game. 60 divided by 16 is 3.75. That's
bad math.
12, I think you're thinking of 60, 12. Yeah, so –
Friday,
so 60
is,
we'll call it four a game rounding up, and 55 is 3.4, so 3 to 4 a game.
So three to four a game. Remember, for Heath to get the numbers that he had, he's had to have a couple of 10 reception games, you know, last couple seasons here. I don't know. I just worry about him contributing the way a lot of people think he's going
to
contribute.
Well, I mean, I guess we'll see. But I just want him to stay healthy, and everything else will be gravy.
Although you got $20 million, you know, four-year,
$20 million. You don't do that. Especially the Steelers don't do that unless you really have a good feeling and a good plan about how to get him involved in your offense.
Well, I mean, I think like I said, I think he hits 40 without issue. Probably hits 45 without issue. I just. What did Heath catch 60. Last year?
Oh, yeah. Now there's no more Tavis Bryant either to siphon away some of that. I mean, I know you're going to have Coates develop and yada yada, but still.
I sure hope he hits that number.
Better.
Boy, it would certainly be nice.
If he does, something went wrong. He's an injury, if you ask me.
All right, let's see. We talked a lot about offense so far. Do we have anything defensively to talk about? Here's a couple things where I don't think we've hit on a couple of injury mop-ups or injury kind of report type of things. Cinquez Goldson, I don't think if we knew on Monday what the issue with Cinquez Goldson is, but we found out on Tuesday soft tissue injury with him. It wasn't related to his shoulder. I don't believe from everything I can decipher, didn't practice. With the team, you know, probably if he did anything, it was individual type stuff this past week, and I kind of doubt he did that. My speculation is this is a guy that missed a full season, probably, you know, having some trouble knocking the rust off, probably pulled a hamstring or something along those lines, or a calf or something like that, and it probably wouldn't surprise me if he misses the final week of OTAs as well, too, and keep your fingers crossed he could take part in the mandatory minicamp. As far as he goes, at least it doesn't sound long-term or serious or anything that would prevent him from lining up in training camp. We found out what the nature of Daniel McCullough's issue was during the offseason. He had shoulder surgery. I know you probably kind of speculated and thought maybe he had to do something with that knee, but that didn't wind up being the case with him. He's evidently lost, 10, 15 pounds during the offseason as well, too. So, you know, outside of Le'Veon Bell missing some time, getting treatment, which isn't surprising, James Harrison having a concussed birth certificate, keeping him out of action, that'll probably be the case with him for the remainder until the team hits training camp. Am I missing anybody as far as injury concerns go?
No, I think that's about it. Dupree mysteriously missed one of the OTAs, I think, but nothing real concern there. Ben wasn't around for one of them, but I think probably just home with the wife and the new kid. Yeah, Goldson, I just want to see this guy practice. I mean, man, we're talking about a lot of missed time for a young guy who wants to be involved in this offense and expected to play a significant portion. So I'm really hoping he gets out there, hopefully, for this last week of OTAs, and if not, at least for the mid-June minicamp, which is, June 16th through the 18th, I think?
I think that sounds right. I think they have time off between the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
They have a week off between the mandatory minicamp.
Yeah. I think it is a week, and then they come back for whatever it is, mid-June. I'm pretty sure it's the 16th through the 18th, a three-day mandatory minicamp.
All right. Is there anything else? I mean, you know, we're kind of manufacturing stuff now because there just hasn't been a lot of stuff to come out out of the OTAs because – quite frankly, the media is not allowed to report
much.
Well,
we had talked about going over that four-man, you know, pass rush quick study that I did, again, using our charting from last year. I don't know if it produced any huge surprises, but, you know, over 50% of the time last year, the Steelers used a four-man rush without a blitz. So either kind of they're in their base 3-4, their three linemen plus one of the linebackers with the other dropping, or in their nickel, you know, the two outside linebackers and the two defensive linemen rushing. That was 50.5% of the time last season. In terms of just four-man rushes total, it was 56% of the time. So that includes some of the blitzes that Keith Butler did. But their sack percentage was only 5.2%. So the bottom line is, you know, the Steelers are still very dependent on a four-man rush, and that is still the basis of how they generate pressure and how they need to generate pressure. It's what Keith Butler's talked about. It's what Tomlin's talked about. He's basically said that a four-man rush kind of defines you. And if it doesn't work and you have to go to more five- and six-man rushes, it's naturally going to kind of leave you more open and vulnerable in the secondary. So I said that before, and I'll say it again, Dave, is that the four-man rush, specifically the outside linebackers, have to get some more pressure and some more sacks in 2016.
Yeah, that's been – I've written about that a few times myself. It'll make the secondary that much better.
Yeah, I mean, they all work together. It's married. Great defenses can marry that pass rush and the coverage. And you see a lot of the instances of some of the pressure and the sacks the Steelers got last year. It was from both. It was from a great pass rush that was gap sound, play with integrity, guys that worked hard, and a good coverage in terms of the schematics of it and the individual matchups.
If you start getting pressure more with four-man stuff too, and you're disguising your stuff well, you know, it gives you the potential at times to even drop eight into coverage,
mm-hmm.
you know, as well, and maybe having some success there. How many times do we see this team drop eight into coverage, and it just seemed like the play lasts forever?
A couple times, yeah, and they did two or three-man rushes 44 times last year, so that was just under 7%. But it's a nice little wrinkle that you can give. Didn't they drop eight against the Colts, and didn't they get an interception? Didn't they get an interception out of that, though, early? But
yeah.
After that, it didn't work as well. But it's occasionally something different that you can do, and I think that they dropped eight there in the red zone. You do that against, you know, quarterbacks that are not athletic. It was Matt Hasselbeck starting that week, so you know, fewer, less athletic than Matt Hasselbeck. So if you drop eight in the red zone, you condense everything. Quarterback can't find a window. He can't move. He can't extend the play. You can mix it in there a little bit in the right situation.
Didn't they drop eight in that game against Baltimore quite a bit with
the first or the second Baltimore game?
The second one who started that game? Yeah, right.
Yeah,
Allen.
That was not a good game for Keith Butler. I think that and the Seattle game were probably his worst ones.
Man, if you stop that long, if Antoine Blake makes that tackle in that game, on that third down, right? Third 10. If you get off the field in that situation, what could have possibly been. Let's see, what else do we have to wrap the show up with?
I'm doing a little new series with my friend The Train behind me, if you can hear him. Never live near train tracks is my advice to anybody. It's a terrible decision. New series I'm doing, just looking at like one individual aspect for players to improve on. And of course, every player wants to improve on several different areas. But I started with Ross Cockrell. I thought he needs to be a lot more physical presence in terms of a tackler in the open field, as a run defender on some of these crack replace plays, and sometimes the force defender, especially now that he's going to be, you know, likely involved much more as the base corner. Obviously, last year was still Antoine Blake for the majority of the season. So that's my biggest thing for Cockrell, is he's got to be more physical. That's kind of always been his issue. I saw that coming out of Duke. I think he's got to play with a lot more intensity and aggressiveness and quit the whole Bob Ross painting stuff for a season, because I think he really needs to do that now that he's going to be a starter, or likely to be a starter.
Yeah, I think also we forgot to mention the Steelers signed fourth-round draft pick Gerald Hawkins on Thursday, so now there are two draft picks not yet under contract, talking about Artie Burns and Javon Hargrave would be the two that are left. And the only reason those things are taking long, as I wrote in the news clip on Thursday, offset language and all like that is usually the only things that hold up those guys from getting signed, and that's common across the league as well too. Let's see. A few donations came in this past week. Junior Anderson and George Odoherty.
Thank you, George. Just George.
George. Thanks, George. I think that's got it until Monday of next week. I doubt we're going to have a lot to talk about on Monday today, but either Alex or David Todd will be with me to keep this train moving. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazor. You can follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find the donate button in the navigational bar. Alex, I appreciate your time today. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.